This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
8:37 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wong Xiaoning and Chong Jen Sun. We are entering day five of post-GE50 negotiations to form the next government. The Conference of Rulers is expected to convene today, following the series of meetings held between the Yang di-Pertuan Agong and political parties over the past 2 days.
One of the proposals put forth by Istana Negara to resolve the current impasse is for the major coalitions to form a unity government. The initial proposal for Pakatan Harapan and Perikatan Nasional Unity Government was rejected by Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin on Tuesday, while Pakatan Harapan indicated it was open to explore the idea. Yesterday, PN and Barisan Nasional were in talks at St. Regis Hotel after BN leaders met with the Yang di-Pertuan Agong in the morning.
So what could be the possible permutations of a Malaysian unity government? And how stable would this alliance be, given the distrust among all parties? For some thoughts on what kind of unity government could take shape, we speak to Dr. Lau Jiawei, Assistant Professor at the International Islamic University of Malaysia. Jiawei, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Now, the King has reportedly requested for parties to consider forming a unity government. Can we start with a definition of what is a unity government? And how might this take shape in a Malaysian context?
Good morning. Thank you for having me here. Now, unity government, we talk about the theoretical part first. Only we come into the practical part in the case of Malaysia. Theoretically, unity government, what we refer to is to unite most of the party, if possible, all the party together under the governmental section, meaning all of them will be the government. Usually, ideally, unity government is more useful during an emergency period. For example, during wartime, during any big emergency and so on. So this will be the theoretical concept. When we apply into Malaysia, what the King trying to do was to ask them to form the government together. Actually, you do not need to have all the parties. As long as the main party is willing to work together, that will be the end of the case. The small party, they will willingly to join in. So this will be the concept. But the most difficult part is how to make all these main parties or coalition to work together. Especially Perikatan Nasional and Pakatan Harapan.
Okay, the other thing I have in mind, especially since you highlighted Perikatan Nasional and Pakatan Harapan, how stable would a unity government be like that, taking into account, you know, the shifting political alliances in this country?
I personally have high doubt on that. I do not think it will be stable in the sense of, let's move a bit far away. A coalition can be stable when all the component parties are willing to concede to certain facts. For example, Barisan Nasional can be stable because MCA, MIC wouldn't fight for prime ministership. Pakatan Harapan can be stable, at least between PKR, DAP and Amanah, because these two parties wouldn't fight for presidency of Pakatan Harapan or become prime minister candidate. But back to this case, do you think will any of them, whether Pakatan Harapan or Perikatan Nasional, will continue to fight for the premiership? Personally, I think so. Therefore, I highly doubt that it will be stable. Very good example, look at Ismail Sabri cabinet. Last time. It couldn't be stable because there's still some hard for them to be prime minister, same to Muhyiddin governments. So at the end of the day, I am not being convinced that these two, Pakatan Harapan and Perikatan Nasional, can be willing to concede to the prime minister candidate that's been appointed.
And Jervin, why is a unity government preferred over a minority government at the current stage of negotiations? Does one offer more stability than the other?
Technically, we talk about the technical part first, theoretical part first. If a unity government is the unity government that we can learn it from the book, then yes, it can be much more stable because you have more than half of the members, meaning most of the bill that you're going to propose is going to pass through. But if you're talking about minority government, there's no guarantee that other people who is not in the government will support your motion. So this will be the theoretical answer for that. But practically, back to the question just now, can a unity government that we form be the unity government that we imagine? Meaning, they'll be really in the set of the government and follow whatever the government said. Meaning, they'll vote by party discipline or governmental discipline. I have doubt. So at the end of the day, whether we call it unity government or coalition government or whatever we call it, if you don't have trust, if all of them cannot toe to the discipline and they will betray or they'll vote against at the end of the day, it becomes meaningless.
But I'm wondering whether this can be overcome with an MOU or a CSA in terms of getting everyone to follow party lines or the coalition lines?
We go to two directions. Number one is the legal, number two is practical. The legal direction will be no. It has no legal implication. Even if you sign MOU today, you sign CSA today, or even the one that we often hear this year, this statutory declaration, SD, it has no legal outstanding legal position in terms of that political cooperation. Today you sign it, tomorrow you breach it, it is perfectly fine. Therefore, legally, it has no such kind of like bonding them together. Then next, we talk about practicality. It can only apply, in my opinion, if gentleman politics being in place. What do I mean by gentleman politics is we adhere to that, we fulfill that requirement due to we have already agreed beforehand, meaning we don't breach our promise, we don't breach our agreement. This can happen in a lot of other countries, especially in a mature democracy. But back to Malaysia, do you think we have already achieved a level where we practice gentleman politics, meaning we do things in a gentleman way and not finding the loophole of the law? I still have high doubts on that. So at the end of the day, with the MOU, CSA, SD, or whatever things that we name it, which have no legal implications, I highly doubt that this thing can last. Hopefully, I do hope that it can last. But in practical terms, from all the experiences that we went through, I really have doubt.
Joey, if a unity government is formed, what does that mean for the opposition bloc? Will there be an opposition if there's a unity government to act as a check and balance?
If we talk about the theoretical part, it's supposed to be all of the parties will be joining the government side. Meaning, remember just now we said that mostly it will be formed during emergency period, for example, wartime and so on. So during wartime, you don't really need that kind of opposition to really check and balance because everybody will observe their duty, will toe to the line and not to really misuse it. So theoretically, you do not need to have opposition because theoretically, number one, you do not really need to check and balance during emergency period. Number two, those in the government, they to a certain extent can act as check and balance themselves.
And Joey, part of the difficulties of negotiating to form the government relates to the fact that Malaysian parties operate in permanent coalitions rather than based on individual parties. Do you think we should move away from permanent coalitions to allow more flexibility and freedom for parties to team up?
This is something that proposed by a lot of people. But my question back to them will be, how are they going to contest in the elections? Don't forget, if you are contesting in a proportionate representation system, no problem. We fight among ourselves. We go in our own way. Then at the end of the day, we just combine the number. Perfectly fine. But we are using first past the post. So the question will be, for example, you have 10 seats. Then Barisan Nasional, you have three main component parties. Who should contest the seat? Should all of them contesting the seats since they are not really form a permanent coalition? Or should they sort of like cooperate with one another? Or in another words, you call electoral pact. But you have electoral pact. A lot of people like to differentiate, oh, this is electoral pact, this is coalition government. Practically for me, it wouldn't be run away in terms of the practicality, in terms of, yeah, definition can run away, but it wouldn't be far away in terms of the practicality. Because at the end of the day, you need to trust your so-called electoral pact partners before you give way to them to fight the seats. So when you predict that kind of thing, meaning you're quite highly having confidence that they wouldn't betray you. If they betray you, you wouldn't be so nice to give way to them. So at the end of the day, to say that we do not form a permanent coalition first, or we form a coalition after elections, I have high reservation on that. The simple reason is how you're going to allocate the seats or how you're going to contest the seats due to our electoral system.
Okay, one last question for us and in the minute that we have left. I mean, what permutation of unity government do you think is most likely given the current state of discussions?
Honestly, this is basically about guessing game, not really about intelligent guess anymore because anything happened at any minute. But what I will propose for the future, because I believe that this kind of landscape, right, it will last for quite some time. So instead of repeating this kind of scenario every time from here to then, what I'll propose is why not, after we form a whatever government we have it, we come up with a constitutional amendment to amend a concept of constructive vote of no confidence. If you realize nowadays, even though you have unity government, even though you have coalition government, at the end of the day, if someone betray you, if someone have more than majority to vote against you, the prime minister have to be brought down. The next question is, who is going to be the next prime minister? The same thing is going to repeat and repeat and repeat again. So why not we follow certain countries like Germany or certain other countries where they have constructive vote of no confidence? Constructive vote of no confidence, meaning in order to bring down Prime Minister, it is still permissible. but you must have a positive prime minister candidate. Positive meaning the next in line, the one that you propose, must be having majority support. Only then you can bring down the existing government. I feel this way is more workable rather than current system. Okay, you have a prime minister, which through unity or through coalition government, maybe next month, 1 year later, more people in the opposition side bring them down. Then what will happen next? The same thing going to repeat. So this is something that our country may need to consider to start to think about that. Is All it right. good to have an idea of constructive vote of no confidence?
Joey, thank you very much for your explanation. That was Dr. Lau Joey, Assistant Professor at the International Islamic University of Malaysia, talking us through what a unity government could look like, all the pros and cons, really, and really the theory and practice of things can be very far apart. It's 8:47 in the morning. We're heading into some messages, and when we come back, we're going to focus on the political calculations of UMNO and Barisan Nasional. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.